Welcome to the 12 Songs of Christmas. Today with Scott McCoy of the Minus Five. My name is Alex Rawls, and today I'm talking with Scott McCoy, who has a long history in independent rock and roll, having been a member of Young Fresh Fellows in the 80s, and then the Minus Five, the Baseball Project, and a lot of other one-off projects, including a long time as a sideman for REM's touring band. In 2017, he released a Christmas album with the Minus Five titled Dear December. But as we talk about in our conversation, he never got to play those songs live that holiday season because he suffered a stroke right around the time of its release. We had a great conversation about his stroke, Dear December, Christmas music, and his contributions to this year's Christmas album from the Monkees, Christmas Party. Here's that conversation. How's your health?
It's pretty good. Yeah, I'm you know, I got a ways to go still, but on a lot of things. But I feel, you know, I'm pretty good. You know.
Oh, excellent.
Can't complain.
That's great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Do I remember right now that you had the stroke in November 2017? How close was that to the release of Dear December?
It was a week before the day it came out.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So I kind of missed the whole release date and everything. I mean, I wasn't there for it.
I was wondering how not being there to play those songs affects your relationship to that record.
Well, it did, because it kind of wiped it out for me. But then a year later, you know, this last year, I felt like, well, now I can do a release show, you know, like I can try to play these shows like a year later. Yeah. And I did. We did a little show in Portland with we played the entire record, I think, and a bunch of other Christmas songs. So we did a little Christmas show that was really, really fun. It was pretty ragtag and thrown together, but it was great. And you know, I had to use cheat sheets for the words, because I couldn't remember them at all. You know, I'd never played any of them live before at all. So it went really well. It went really well. I think we're going to try to do it like a yearly thing now, you know, because it was really fun. It was really fun. And so now I kind of got the songs back to me again. You know, they're good songs, and it was hard for me to grasp them after the stroke and everything happened. But now I feel like, yeah, they're there, and I can reclaim them, as it were.
What do you mean by hard to grasp?
Well, because I couldn't, after the stroke, I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember any words of any songs ever.
Wow!
Like I was wiped out, you know, wiped clean. So, and gradually, and through just trying to drill words into my songs and doing therapy, words started coming back to me a little bit. I mean, I still really, really struggle with it, but I've gotten better as I've gone along. So now I can, you know, kind of, I mean, I couldn't really remember. I couldn't like tell you what the words of the song are, but I think I'll get better and better. So I think like next year, maybe I'll be able to sing them without reading them off of a music stand.
Right.
It's possible. Cause I mean, I've played a lot of shows since then, and some shows I've gotten by without, you know, cheat sheets.
Sure.
But it's really hard. But you know, I started like in, last April, I started to play shows. I started doing these little therapy sessions, these 6 to 8 o'clock, like happy hour kind of shows, where I would play Beatles songs, Neil Young songs, and Minus Five songs, the ones I could remember. And so those were kind of the ones that I figured would be the most in my DNA, that I might be able to recall them. And they gradually started coming to me, coming back to me. So, you know, it's still a work in progress, but I feel like it's getting better. And so, you know, I'm hoping maybe next year on Christmas, maybe I'll be able to sing these songs without having to read them.
Does that affect the way you sing when you have to read them too?
Well, I mean, it's hard because, I mean, it's not only just comprehension and remembering the words. It's like even when I'm thinking them, they come out garbled in my mouth sometimes. it's really weird. It's hard to explain, but you know, even if when I think I'm singing, sometimes it doesn't come out like I mean it to.
Sure.
Like, so I think people who are used to hearing me in the shows around town recently are probably overlooking the fact that I'm singing some really weird things here and there, but but you know, I think the Christmas show was really, really fun, and nobody cared that I was cheating. You know, I mean, it was fine, and it was really fun to play those songs. It was a really joyous occasion, and it was a year late, but it happened.
Yeah,
at least.
I'll tell you why I asked that question is I was wondering if, you know, just that minor lag between your eye and the processing and getting it back out, if that affects sort of subtly your, you know, sort of your timing of your phrasing when you're singing a song.
Well, it probably does. It probably does a little bit. Everything's affected a little bit, you know. It is for sure. But on the bright side, my voice is good, you know. Okay. It works well, so it's just getting it to come out. But but you know, yeah, it's a weird one. It's hard to explain. It's like I'm thinking of the words, and but you know, that part of my brain is dead. You know, I mean, it's you don't get it back. You know, so. But the brain is so amazing, it figures out ways to get around the dead part and somehow get back to the stuff that was there beforehand. But so it feels really weird because it comes from a different place when I'm trying to remember words. It's not automatic like it was before. It's like there's a delay, like they're trying to make their way back to me. It's really fascinating. It's really weird. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's a strange feeling.
I was going to say that it has to be bizarre to have all these songs that you wrote and have no access to them. To have the realization that I made that and I don't know what I made.
It is, but it's funny because the ones that have come back to me the best are there's the ones that were like I was singing like in the Minus Five on that tour when I had the stroke, those have a pretty good chance of coming back because I was singing them a lot. But then the ones that really come back out of nowhere are the oldest songs that I just sang so many times, like the early Young Fresh Fellows songs.
Wow.
That I've been singing for 30 years, you know. Those will occasionally will pop back and a whole song will pop back, you know. And the same with like Beatles and Neil Young songs, you know, those are just ones that are so much a part of me that I suddenly will come back to me, you know.
Right.
And that being said, they can go away again really quickly. but sometimes they really come back, and that's amazing. And it's some of the ones that they've been around for the longest time. They're the ones that I can remember the best. Not necessarily the ones that are new or fresh or whatever.
that has to actually be, I don't know if this is looking for a good side, but there has to be something really interesting about it, about in a way sort of rediscovering music, or, you know, rediscovering, you know, sort of rediscovering your own songs even at this point in your career.
It is. It's true. It really is. It's kind of like hearing with new ears, you know. I mean, it really was right when I first had the stroke, when I started, I was in the hospital and Peter Buck was there, and he made a playlist on an iPod of all Beatles. And that was just like, it was like hearing them with new ears, because these songs I heard a billion times, you know?
Right.
And they're both bringing me back to things I knew, but also it was like hearing them with new ears, because my brain was just such a different state. So it is kind of fascinating in that way.
So what did you think of the Christmas record when you were able to get back to it and play it again?
I really like it. I'm really pleased with it. You know, I mean, my one quibbling with it was that I wish I could have put the Christmas in Antarctica song on it, because I don't know if you heard that one. That
I saw it, but I haven't listened to it yet.
Yeah, you know, it was released digitally this year because we were holding that for the Monkees album.
Okay.
And they were going to record they wanted me to hold that one for them and Christmas Party, they ended up recording, which was awesome and amazing and the greatest, but they didn't do Christmas in Antarctica. So I would have liked to have put that on the record. I would have just like made it just a little bit better, but you know, but it's out there. And I think it's a really good record. And I think I walked a fine line on it where I wanted it to be Christmassy, but without being just typical lyrically, you know, like I didn't want it to all be about Santa or Jesus. In fact, I wanted Santa and Jesus to be barely mentioned
right
on the record. And I think they might each get one mention on the entire 11 songs. And, But I still feel like the record has a really Christmas feel for it. You know, I think it, you know, it sounds like a Christmas record when you put it on, without pandering to the Jesus thing or too much about Santa and that kind of stuff.
What's the song that you think most thoroughly captures the Christmas thing?
Well, let's see. Oddly, I guess maybe it's When Christmas Hurts You This Way, which is kind of a sad one and a bummer, but I think it's got a really nice feel to it, and it's a really pretty song, and it's, you know, I think it's about Christmas, but it's sad, you know? But I think it really works. I mean, I love the new Christmas hymn. I like that one because the lyrics are meaningful to me. But it's not as much of a Christmas feeling track. It's more like a revved up folk rock song or something, but so it's not as Christmassy musically, but I think lyrically, it's probably the best one. But for the Christmas feeling track, I think I really like the When Christmas Hurts You This Way.
You mentioned a new Christmas hymn. What about the lyrics make that sort of the best, most Christmassy one for you?
Well, I mean, it's really like a folk protest song, really. You know, like, I was thinking more like a, like coming from Woody Guthrie, you know, like with all the things going on in the country and how negative I could be about it. I wanted to say something positive about it, but you know, it was like I was referring to the people, the refugees, you know, not having a place to go, things like that. So it's more like a populist folk song, but bringing it into the Christmas, you know, the Christmas spirit of giving and caring about people, and not, you know, it was combating the horrible person and people who've taken over their country.
Right.
And don't give a shit about people except for their fucking rich asshole friends. You know.
Hey, Bob, Betty, Jim, come on over to the piano.
What was growing up? What was your relationship to Christmas and Christmas music?
I loved it. I loved the holiday because I was a little greedy little kid who wanted presents and stuff like that. And you know, but the Christmas records I listened to as a kid were the old favorites, the weird ones that my parents just had, like the voices of Walter Schumann, which I parody at the beginning of the. Of New Christmas hymn. I go, hey, Bob, Betty, Bill, come on over to the piano. That's stolen exactly from the Walter Schumann, the voices of Walter Schumann Christmas record.
Oh, wow.
Which me and my siblings always thought it was the funniest song ever. And it starts with that. So it was a little nod to my family to start off the record with that, you know, it was just like a little nod to my childhood and to my siblings. I thought they would get a kick out of it.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, and the cover is sort of a takeoff of the voices of Walter Schumann record. In fact, the original cover I had for December was actually I took the voices of Walter Schumann record and I just crossed it out and put in the -5. We did it that, but then the legal department at Yep Rock decided that was not cool, which I thought nobody's going to care, but you know, they have to cover their asses on stuff like that. So they shot it down, but I got another picture that looked kind of like it and we changed it. But I thought it would have been hilarious if we just had it with their name crossed out and put the -5 instead.
Hey, Bob, Betty, Jim, come on over to the piano.
Everybody gather round, take your seats and all sit down. First I start to sing the song, then you follow right along. Is this not a Christmas tree?
Yes, this is a Christmas tree.
Isn't all the candy free?
Oh, yes, all this candy's free.
Candy free.
Christmas tree.
Oh, what a happy Christmas party. What a merry Christmas tree.
You got the idea. What else was in your parents' house?
Well, you know, I mean, as I got a little older, of course, when I became a when I was a teenager, you know, I got into the Beatles, little Christmas records, which are not really Christmas records at all, but they're really funny. I love those. And then, you know, when I got to be 20 or whatever, I got the Phil Spector Christmas record, and that changed everything. You know, that is the Christmas album. That's right. When you think of a Christmas record, you think of the sound of that record, you know?
Right.
So that's a huge, huge effect. But I'm trying to think of the other ones when I was a little kid. I mean, we had the Vienna Boys Choir, who I mentioned in a song, too, in Your Christmas Whiskey. But my parents would play the Vienna Boys Choir. That was more like kind of religious, like more classical music almost in a way. But but there was a lot of just really, like Stephen Eady, you know, It's Cold Outside by them, stuff like that. And, you know, of course, the old favorites like Nat King Cole and, you know, that was like that's the first song I really remember really touching me as a little kid, is the Christmas song, you know, the Mel Torme song.
Right.
And I still think that's an amazing song. I still think it's a beautiful song. It's kind of like, for all the imagery, the typical Christmas imagery, it kind of has it all in that one. And it's a beautiful melody, and it's sung so beautifully by many different people, but I guess Nat King Cole is probably the classic one, but that one, that's a great one. That's a favorite.
Yep. You know, I tell you, you were talking a moment ago about the Phil Spector Christmas album. And one of the things I was thinking about, actually I was sort of writing a little bit about today, is that it's one of the handful of Christmas albums that is actually a really good Christmas album. You know, that there are, you know, a lot of people have made good records, but, you know, you think about, you know, the story of Christmas music is largely the story of Christmas songs, and far more so than albums. You know, what else is on? What else is on Mariah Carey's "All I Want for Christmas Is You," or what else is on the album that has the Nat King Cole album with the Christmas song? You know, you don't know what else is on those, but you actually do know other songs from a number of songs from the Phil Spector Christmas album. I've been kind of coming to grips with that idea that this really was is fundamentally, you know, or it used to be fundamentally a singles, sort of a singles form.
Yeah, well, that's true. But, and I really wanted my Christmas album to be a full album of all quality songs. And I wanted them to be, I didn't want to rely on old favorites, because most albums that come out now, I mean, it's typical just to have one or two new songs and then just pad it with versions of songs you've heard a billion times. And I just did not want to do that, you know?
Right.
I didn't want to do that because it seems like that's a typical thing to do, you know? Sure. Nobody needs to hear me singing, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. I mean, right. God, no one ever needs to hear that. Although the Young Christellas did a really good version of the Bethlehem song. What's it called?
A Little Town of Bethlehem.
Yeah, A Little Town of Bethlehem. Yeah. See, that's how my memory does block shit out like that.
Right.
I would know that. But yeah, A Little Town of Bethlehem. The fellows did a really good version of that on a Christmas compilation album. But, you know, but in general, I would just wanted to totally avoid that stuff.
Sure.
So, and I thought, you know, I could have covered a couple of cooler songs that maybe people don't know as much, like Merry Christmas, Everybody by Slade, you know,
right,
or something like that. Those would have been great, but I came up with enough songs myself that I didn't have to dip in elsewhere. I didn't even sing all. I had a couple of Christmas songs that I didn't put on the record that I'd written a long time ago that were kind of the snarky Christmas songs, and I didn't want to I didn't want to go that direction either. Because I wanted it to be a record. I wanted it to be a record that people could put on in Christmas and not think that I was judging them.
Right.
You know, because, you know, I mean, at the Christmas show, I played one of those songs, those old songs called "Saint Nick's a Dick." you know, I played that one because it's a good, funny song, but I didn't want to put it on the record. It would have been in character with what I was trying to do with this record. You know, and I have another song called "Santa Claustrophobia," which is about, you know, a kind of a Santa Claus at a mall or whatever, who kind of molests girls, you know. So I didn't want that on this record either.
Right.
So maybe I'll put out a single of those two songs next year.
Yeah. You know, I've always thought those songs were too easy. I mean, not yours specifically, but the songs that kind of piss on Christmas. I always thought that always felt like that's not, you haven't done anything when you've done that. You know, it's so easy to dump on it if you want to. You know, if you're going to take a swing at it, take a good swing. And, you know, if you're going to dump on it, you know, dump for good reasons. Just, you know, if you want to dump on it because it's sentimental, it's like, yes, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. There's a few songs that I guess you could say are negative about Christmas that are really still really good. Like Father Christmas by the Kinks, you know?
Right.
That's a good one. And it does have a little bit of heart to it. You know, it's saying to think of people who don't have stuff too. You know, that's the heart of it. So, and then there's Don't Believe in Christmas by the Sonics, which I just love that. It's like, you know, I don't believe in Christmas because you know, Santa didn't bring me nothing this year or whatever. It's just a really good, funny song about, you know, being bummed at Christmas because you don't get shit. You
right,
know?
Right.
So that's a really good one too. So there's a few that work that way, and I like them, but I didn't want my album, my Christmas album to be coming from that direction, you know? Right.
Said the good, so I did what I should. Hung my stocking on a wall, didn't get a thing at all. Don't believe in Christmas. Don't believe in Christmas. Don't believe in Christmas. Cause I didn't get nothing last year. Well, stayed up late at night to see Santa Claus.
What was the idea behind getting so many guests for the record?
I just thought it'd be nice to have different voices in there. You know, I didn't ever feel like it needed to be all me, singing. I probably would have liked even more different voices on it, but yeah, I wanted it to be a fun thing. Like, have a lot of my friends on it and have different singers. Like, you know, again, on the Phil Spector record, you know, you don't think the record doesn't sound coherent because there's a bunch of different singers on it, you know, because it still has the uniform sound of the backdrop of Christmas production. And I figured, you can have different people sing. It doesn't have to be all about me.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but I think one of the things I thought was interesting about it, and kind of one of the things I've come to sort of connect with about Christmas in general, was that kind of makes the record feel very kind of like a, you know, like a communal experience. Like it's like, it is a sort of a family and friends experience. And, and it felt like a way to kind of make the, you know, make the record kind of mirror the event, you know, cause I mean, at this point, you know, like, you know, we have, you know, sort of have a bunch of people who are a part of how we spend our Christmas, you know, how we spend our Christmas every year. And it sort of, if it doesn't involve some of these people, you know, it wasn't, you know, Christmas didn't quite work that year. And so it kind of felt like to be able to actually sort of get musical friends on there felt like a way of putting that community back into your, you know, actually like sort of hardwiring it into the record.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's what I wanted. And then, of course, it turned out really weird because of what happened, you know. But and all those people are in my community, and they all rallied around me and everything. So so it worked out really well. But yeah, I wanted it to feel like it's like a communal thing, not just a message from me, for sure.
Now, you know, Christmas is often so, you know, Christmas music is often sort of so nostalgic. Do you feel like there are songs in here that kind of tap nostalgic buttons, even though it's obviously not sort of aiming straight at nostalgia?
Let me think about that. Trying to think what other songs are on the record. You know, I wouldn't say it's really nostalgic coming from the lyric side. I think musically it is, but not so much from the lyric side. It's like I said, it was a fine line I was trying to walk. You know, putting in not just the love and happiness of the holidays, but the sadness of the holidays too.
Right.
You know, I put a little bit of that in there too, but without being overly negative, hopefully.
Right.
So yeah, I was trying to stay away from the traditional lyrical, the traditional lyrics kind of thing. So, but being a little sneaky about it. Of course, mistletoe gets a mention in somewhere. You know, there's just this, I guess there weren't any chestnuts maybe in there, but you know, just like I kind of kept nodding to traditional things, but without really pandering to them, I think.
You mentioned earlier the Monkees Christmas album. Can you tell me about that experience?
Well, it was weird because, I mean, that's the whole reason that my album happened, is because I had heard that they were looking for songs for a Christmas record. And I was like, oh, I'm going to try to submit a couple. So I came up with one or two that I thought were good. And I wouldn't hear back from them. So I'd send them more. So I sent them like five or six maybe. And then I was like, God, they're never going to record all these. I might as well just keep writing songs, and maybe I'll put on my own record, because maybe they won't record any of them, you know? And so I realized I pretty much put together, I immediately jumped from writing songs for them to writing a whole record. And I did, and I had to wait and see. Then they finally get back to me. I had a whole record done, and then I had to wait to them to get back to me. And at the last minute, they said I left off the Christmas in Antarctica because they wanted that, and then I had the record mastered, my record mastered with the Christmas Party on it, and at the last minute they said, oh, we want to do that song, can you leave that one off too? And so I said yes. Yeah, so I took it off, so it went from 12 songs to, or 13 songs to 11 songs, and I was like, well, I'll just put it out, as long as I'm not competing with any, using any of the same songs they're going to use, it's okay. And then it turned out they didn't get theirs done, so theirs didn't come out the same year as mine. It didn't come out till a year later. So, because originally it was supposed to come out the same time mine did. But, so yeah, I mean, that's the whole reason my record came together, is because I was demoing a bunch of songs for the Monkees album. And I just got carried away, as I will. when you put a task in front of me, I just kept writing. And so then after that all happened, I put out my record. Then it turned out they were going to use Christmas Party, and they actually had Peter and I fly down to L.A. to record it with them. So we tracked it with Mickey. Mickey was the only one there who was actually in the band, because they pretty much do it all separately, you know?
Right.
But Mickey's kind of the main go-to guy, and he's involved in, you know, he sings, 9 out of the 12 songs on the record or whatever, you know? So there's one by Peter and two by Mike Nesmith. But the rest of it's all Mickey with Adam Schlesinger and his cronies down there. But it was really, really amazing to go down there and record with them. And to be like, we're playing on a records album, you know? And on a Monkees album. And it's a great history of, you know, being in a Monkees thing where it's like, okay, we're the band, we're session guys, we're the songwriters, you know, the whole thing. So Peter and I, it was like kind of a dream for us, because we both were big Monkees fans since we were like 10 or 12 years old, you know?
Right.
And to be part of it was really amazing. And I remember going over the lyrics with Mickey, and I was like, you don't have to sing it exactly like I phrased it on the demo. He's like, oh, it's your song. I want to get it right. I want to get it right for you. I want you to be happy with it. You know, it was so amazing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't care how you sang it. I was like, just sing it however you want. But he was really, really took great care to it. And, it was really, really fun experience.
He plays football. I don't know who this guy is or this guy yet. This guy is always doing this to everybody. This is Bud, my buddy.
Consciously sort of writing when you started, were you sort of consciously writing in their voice or with them in mind? Was there a distinction between songs for them and songs for you?
Well, there was, like I said, there was like probably maybe five or six of them that I sent to them. So I definitely thought I was writing specifically for what I thought might work for the Monkees. Like the Christmas Party, the song that they recorded, I was totally thinking of Mickey doing that one. And I was even thinking he could play drums on it, because I really like his drumming. And so I made it like kind of like a basic thing where I thought this would be really cool with Mickey playing drums too. He didn't end up doing it, but I kind of suggested it, and they kind of molded over, but they had the drummer there. So we just did it with him. But that one was definitely totally for the Monkees and written specifically for him. And Ben and I were writing Christmas in Antarctica. We thought that would be a good Monkees song. That You Tied Me Over, that kind of countryish one, I thought maybe that'd be a good one for Mike Nesmith. So yeah, there was like the good four or five of them that were specifically written with the monkeys in mind. And then I went on to my own thing where I was like, well, I'll just write a bunch more and may put out a whole album. Yeah. So, but yeah, there was four or five of them that were written with the monkeys' voices and feeling in mind, you know, what kind of would be like a monkeys kind of thing. It was funny because on the Christmas Party, the song that when the version that I recorded has a Corinne Tucker from Sleater-Kinney is singing. She's like answering my vocal on it. She's kind of shouting it. So it's kind of like got more of like a soul thing on it. And I said, well, you know, we could probably get her to do that with Mickey on the record if you want anything. They're like, no, it doesn't really sound very monkeys, you know?
Oh, that's
and I was like, oh yeah, yeah. I was, yeah. Okay. You're right. I get it. Yeah. Cause you know, so they know what they want the monkeys to sound like, you know? And that didn't really fit in with them, but the song worked.
Thanks to Scott for the time and the talk. You can follow him on Facebook at -5, and that's the digit 5, not the word. You can also find me at 12 Songs of Christmas. Also, thanks to AF the Naysayer for our theme music. We'll finish with another song from the -5's Christmas collection. This not actually on the album as we talked about. This is Christmas in Antarctica with Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie and the Postal Service. Talk to you again in 2 weeks.
On a lonely South Pole Christmas.